From the University of Southern Maine, we're at 90.9 WMPG in Gorham and Portland. And today, our usual program is not on because we have been invaded by a group of philosophers. So I am the host of USM Music and Me that airs on Thursdays at 3, and Joe Arell, an associate professor here at USM of Philosophy, has brought in a group of 5 other philosophers, and we're going to talk about the philosophy of specific songs. So welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah. So how did this happen to be? I mean, I know how you got on the schedule, but how did you folks who are from Philadelphia, you're from Northern Arizona, you're from near LA, in Queens, how did you appear here on campus deciding that this would be a good thing to do on a July afternoon?
Yeah, well, there's a core group here that's been doing a writing group every year. So where they come together and read each other's work and comment on it and work through the ideas that they're working on. And so luckily enough, they came to Portland, Maine this year, and I'm included. And so we're all here talking about philosophy and trying to check out Portland.
That's really cool. Now, when you talk about writing, are you talking about creative writing, or are you talking about writing for your discipline of philosophy?
All in philosophy, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. So you have all selected a variety of songs, and we're going to talk about them from philosophical point of view. I'm intrigued. I want to know what that is.
We'll see how we do.
We'll see how we do. And if not, we got lots of music to fill time with.
Right on.
So you selected the first one, and it is a certain Beethoven piece. Mm-hmm. So do you want to set that up before we play it?
Yeah, and we could even leave it nameless. Yeah, one way that I've learned to think about music is through Hegel's philosophy of music. He has these excellent lectures on music. And one way that he frames a discussion is just trying to think about what is unique about each art form, right? So, you know, sculpture can do a kind of thing that painting can't quite do. And painting has all these expressive possibilities that are a little different from what music can accomplish. So, you know, he's trying to think about what is the particular expressive creative possibility that music holds. And one thing that he talks about is it's able to capture the inner life in a really sort of deep, intimate way. And you know, I think a lot of people feel that we really connect with music in this deep way because it's able to sort of get inside us and capture our inner life in an important way. And I think this piece is a piece that sort of shows that we feel it, you know, sort of get in our soul right away. And it's sort of, it's moving us, right? We feel moved.
Mm-hmm. And so this particular art form, does Hegel have anything specific to say about how music expresses our inner life any more than, let's say, a piece of literature or something you might see at the Portland Museum of Art?
Yeah, that's a good question, right? Well, one thing is it's abstract. This piece is sort of interesting, right? So it is called the Piano Sonata 14, but it also has another name, which is Moonlight Sonata, right? But without that name, right, if you're not told Moonlight, it's abstract, and you sort of figure out how you're moved by that, right? Another thing that happens with music is it takes place over time, which mm-hmm. is a little different than other art forms that happen all at once. You see the painting at once. You see the sculpture at once. And we're temporal beings. We exist in time. Our emotions sort of anticipate things, and they get resolved in these interesting ways. And music's able to sort of play with that.
And we're bathed in sound waves. So, yeah. You know, if you go and look at a painting and you don't want to look at it anymore, you can close your eyes.
Yeah, that's true.
You can't close your ears to music.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. We're sort of passive to it. It happens to us in a different way.
All right. So let's listen to a little Ludwig von, and we'll come back and talk more about it with the rest of the crew.
Thank you.
And that was Moonlight Sonata by Ludwig von Beethoven, brought to us by Joe Arell, who's the assistant professor of philosophy here at USM, along with several compadres. We have Whitney Howell, the associate professor of philosophy at LaSalle University in Philadelphia, along with Alicia Link, who is an artist in Philadelphia as well, Emiliano Diaz, the assistant professor of philosophy at Purchase College in Queens, New York, Greg Kirk, the associate teaching professor at Northern Arizona University, and Jeff Epstein, the associate professor at Palomar City College near L.A. So typically this time we have Gumbo Shop, but Gumbo Shop is on vacation, so instead we have been invaded by a group of philosophers who want to talk about what music like that means. So tell us what you were thinking of when you picked this particular piece, Joe, and I invite you to include your friends whose mics are all on right now.
Yeah, feel free to jump in, anyone. I mean, one thing I was thinking when I was listening to that is just that it's inarticulate, unlike speech. Like, speech will tell you I'm sad or I'm happy or I'm worried about something. But my emotions don't always do that. Like, I'm feeling anticipation of something. I'm worried about something. I don't know what it is necessarily. And in that piece, I felt that. Like, you know it's going somewhere and it might resolve and it might not resolve. And it gets to these moments, but the story continues, which does capture something about my inner life and my emotional life. I've got worries, I've got anxieties, I'm going to say something silly on the radio, who knows what's going to happen. And some of those feelings aren't articulate. They don't say what they're about, and they don't explain themselves. But I still feel them very deeply, and they sort of run my world in some sense. And I think those pieces can really capture that and get into that part of us.
And unless they're really rigid emotions that have hijacked us in one way or another, they're rather amorphous. They're kind of liquid, so they mm-hmm. kind of float and just kind of swoon around.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So what does our listening audience of philosophers in the other studio think about that particular piece? How does it evoke your ideas and your understanding of philosophy?
Of how we, experience our inner life. One of the things that I thought listening to that, it was the way that that piece changed the way I experienced my inner life. Like, I was forced to move at the pace the music operated in it. And so my, like, it slowed down my sense of time, my sense of myself in time. And so I don't know how that contributes to the discussion.
But. Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think when I first heard that song, I was sort of into rock music, you know, and it had a faster pace. And it wasn't that challenging because it was familiar, I was used to it. And maybe because I was used to it, it wasn't challenging in the ways that this piece was, which also grabbed me when I was, you know, younger. I think it was maybe one of the first pieces of classical music I'd ever heard, which is probably true for a lot of us. And it was compelling in this way that I hadn't encountered, that it's not doing the thing that I want it to do, and I kind of want to back away from it, but then there's something compelling about it because it is... addressing the things that you said, Joe, but it is also sort of, while those emotions are still remaining sort of liquid and amorphous, they're taking a sort of shape that's more definite. That's with the music, right? So they're sort of not yet articulate, not sort of announcing themselves as one thing or another, but they are sort of taking a shape that is the shape of the music in some sense.
And I wonder if that's like what it's like for a piece of music to resonate with me, because it felt like one thing you were saying is it's not doing what I want it to do, or as Greg was sort of saying, it's making me feel in a certain way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when a piece resonates with us, it might be like, that is how I'm feeling right now. Or sometimes that's how I want to feel.
Yeah.
I would love it to bring me to this place.
Or there are these other dimensions of those feelings. There are other sort of flavors. There are other sort of, you know, the palate is richer maybe than I thought, you know, and that can open up thinking and feeling in other ways.
I also think, though, that insofar as we're temporal beings and we're experiencing this piece in time, it has this curious effect because it's, of course, it's pulling us along. It's drawing forth emotion and anticipatory desire towards the resolution of a particular chord or a particular segment of the song. And at the same time, it lifts us outside of ourselves, so we're sort of anticipating towards the future. We have flights of fancy, we have an emotional sort of basis, and we end up occupying temporally both like our present state of listening, our future anticipation of the resolution. It's suggesting desires, and it lends us towards the things that we need from the past to be brought to the table in order to do it. So there's a little bit of multi-temporality that, like, pieces of music can allow to emerge.
Music was, music is, and music shall be.
You got it.
That's right.
You got it.
That's right. So it is interesting that all of you have pointed out that there is the music that we select, that clearly there's some sort of anticipation of what that emotion will be, but also what happens when we encounter a bit of music that we didn't select and what that provokes in us. So it's, you know, the choice in that particular engagement.
Mm-hmm. And like you were saying, unlike I can shut my eyes, it's just might happen to me when I walk down the street or whatever. It's going to grab me.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, something I thought was interesting that you said is, like, I'm an artist in this group. I make things. I make objects, but I also make videos. So I deal with time when I'm making video or doing performance. And I just want to imagine someone in a museum just shutting their eyes because they don't want to experience the painting anymore. I'm done. I'm closing off my senses to this experience. But
you haven't seen Julian Schnabel recently, have you?
No, I guess not. But something else I was thinking about is just this particular experience. So we're in a recording studio, and there's a clock right in front of me ticking. And that song seemed to, like, suspend time in a weird way. Mm-hmm. Like, the minute hand, I felt like it went backwards at one point. And I just was kind of, like, hyper aware of the space I was in. And then you start to associate music with spaces. So now I will hear that song and I'll remember this moment. So so those things are also really connected for me.
So we've got another song that is very different. And so perhaps you all would set this up. So this is Mingus, or a tribute to Mingus.
This is my choice. And I actually had similar things on my mind, similar to what Joe had on his mind, I think, in his choice. And so I do think it's a song that's going to have a really different emotional effect. And so I guess in just setting it up, the question is, you know, what is it about us that makes us open to the emotional effect of music? What is it about us that makes us capable of experiencing something like a melody?
And so for answers to that question, we'll be right back.
Yeah.